Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Men's Monday here on Mind Talk. And I'd like to introduce you again to Sly Young, who is actually a return guest. When we first talked to Sly, we were talking about his experiences of depression and beyond, his initial difficulties with, not initial, but middle of his life, difficulties with educational systems and beyond. And today we're back to discuss four of his books, but we're doing it today in the context of his experience as an African American man. Sly Young, welcome to Mind Talk.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
It is my pleasure to have you back. I'd like to start with reminding you of something that you wrote in a Huffington Post article a few years back.
Okay.
You said, in kindergarten, I quickly learned that the rules weren't always going to be fair. As I was paddled in school for protecting myself from an attack that led to a seat in my principal's chair. Talk about this.
Well, it was one of the first times as a black man, a young black boy, that I realized that when you took action and you looked a certain way, that there would be consequences for your actions, even if you were in the right. Because in this particular situation, a kid hit me who happened to be lighter skinned than I was. I think he was actually either really light or he was white. And he came over and he hit me and he ran over to his mom and hid behind his mom. Well, I had just had a lesson from my older brother that said, if somebody hits you, you hit them back and you don't embarrass me. So having that fresh in my mind, I went over and I hit him because he had hit me. And then I was punished for it, even though that kid had hit me first and I was defending myself. And so it was the first time that I realized that being black had consequences or could have consequences.
And this was in kindergarten.
Kindergarten.
Would you say that as an African-American person living in America, that there's ever a time that just as black folks in general don't know that they're black and don't know what that means in America? Or do you think that that awareness sort of comes over time as they are perhaps exposed to the world outside of their front door?
I think it comes over time, and it depends on your upbringing and your neighborhood. And just to let folks know, we're talking about my article more than a label. And so what I experienced is, early in my life, I wasn't in a diverse neighborhood in the early years, so I didn't see anything that was all that different from me. And so my experiences were unique to the environment that I was in. But as I continued to develop and move to other areas that were more metro, I experienced things that I hadn't experienced before relative to discrimination or being made aware that I looked differently, especially when I lived in Oxford, Mississippi for a year. And that was the first time that I really understood that being black was, for a certain group of people, you could be looked down upon. And as I continue to advance throughout my life, what I realize is that in certain situations where I might have been different than others around me, being black allowed me to be singled out. And what I would add to that, and I think this has really been amplified over the last 20 years, because a lot of students are going through school now and they're being told, you're equal, you're as good as, and then they get out of school and then they realize that what they were sold in elementary, junior high, and high school was a false bill of goods because folks treat them differently outside of that. And I think that's the point where folks get that greater level or sense of awareness that being a person of color is something that you have to be mindful of all the time because folks can and do treat you differently.
So even though you may go through school having very positive educational experiences, both socially and educationally, when you're out of school, I think what you're saying is that's when the truth of the world in which we live kind of hits back and hits hard.
Absolutely. That's when we get the wake-up call.
You have written, I'm looking at your four books, four of the many books that you have written, and I'm looking at part one, Taking Care of Me, out of It's a Crazy World, Learn From It. And I'm looking at one of the commentaries you have and that you call challenging moments. And you say challenging moments in life help to define each individual. The choices made during these times often reflect an individual's true nature. Clearly, what we're talking about is many challenging moments you've had in kindergarten and certainly into your adulthood. How do you deal personally with those challenging moments? What kind of choices have you made?
Well, early in my life, the way that I dealt with challenges wasn't to do anything and just said, oh, well, it just doesn't work. Well, that doesn't lead to a lot of success. And then I also watched people around me who were faced with obstacles and not barriers. The barriers were perceived in their own mind. I consider them to be obstacles. And they would say, well, I guess I didn't do well here, or this happened here. I guess that's sort of fate. I'm not going to do anything. And what I realized is that in order to overcome challenges, you have to be mindful and you have to make conscious choices and subsequent decisions to take action to move forward. Because if you don't do all of those things, then you remain stuck where you are. And I don't know what happened in my life, why I would have thought this, but I remember there was a moment in my life I was standing in front of a McDonald's, and I looked at the McDonald's, and I had never worked at a McDonald's. There's nothing wrong with working at a McDonald's. But I said to myself, I don't want to work at McDonald's all of my life or do anything that might limit my options in the future. And it was at that moment of realization that I said, I have to push myself harder because I have greater dreams and aspirations. So it's also about having and developing your dreams.
Do you have the sense that, and I'm asking you to draw your response from being an African-American man in America. Mm-hmm. Do you have the sense that even as you focus on your dreams and articulate your dreams both internally and externally, that there continues to be pushback?
Absolutely. I think that part of that comes from the things that we described earlier, because when environmental circumstances and situations and organizations treat you differently, or their expectations of you aren't as high, that has an impact on how you go about your life. And so I think it all starts with learning to move past those barriers and how others are seeing us, and realizing that we're more than how others are describing us, and use that as a starting point to say my individuality is what gives me strength, which gives me my individual power, and then I have to find what is it that's within me that drives me forward, that creates my own passion and feelings of self-worth, and to determine what my value is.
So that sounds like a lot of work.
It is. You've got to work on it every single day. One of the things that I tell folks is, it is okay to talk to yourself. You know, folks will say, well, you know, folks might think that there's something wrong if you talk to yourself. Absolutely not. I have self-talks with myself all the time.
But and not outside in the middle of the street, right?
No.
Thank you.
No. But what I'm talking about are purposeful conversations that you have with yourself. I remember the first self-talk that I have, and I've had many since then, but the first self-talk that I had, I realized that I was a very shy individual. I needed to be more confident so that I could be more articulate in my communication skills. And I develop a self-talk that says, simply, I'm a clear, concise, confident communicator. Well, I wasn't at the time, but what I would do, and it was a very mindful exercise, I stood in front of the mirror every day, three times a day, and at least 10 times, I repeated to myself, I'm a clear, concise, confident communicator. I'm a clear, concise, confident communicator. And as I stood in front of the mirror, I looked myself in the eye so that I could look into my soul, so that I was having that conversation with myself. And here's the value of doing that. Because once you think it, you process it once. Once you speak it, you process it twice. Once you hear it, you process it again. And so there's at least three times that you're processing. So I think it, I speak it, I hear it, and then I process it, and it's actually four times that it starts to reprogram your brain. Because especially as someone of color who has been told that you're not as good as, you can't do this, being able to reprogram those negative inputs into positive self-talks, those are critical to drive forward progress.
It sounds like those are critical survival skills.
Absolutely.
And I would say that those are critical survival skills for anyone, but we are specifically talking about your life in the context of being an African-American male. But it's actually critical for anyone and everyone to be able to define a positive self-talk for them that allows them to move forward.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's important is to find positive role models that you can have around you that exemplify the behavior that you want to emulate. So there's a couple of types of mentors that I recommend that folks have. You can have someone who is a family member, whether it's a father, an uncle, a brother, or cousin, who can impact your development and use them as a role model to help guide you through your life. Then I also tell folks that you want to have someone who you can just talk to outside of your family unit, because sometimes we don't want to talk to folks that are within our family about things that might be a little bit more personal, and maybe you might, but at least having that option there. You want to have somebody who can help you with your career. You want somebody who can help you with your profession. And there's other areas that you can get mentoring as well, but look for people who are positive representations of yourself that you can have real conversations and that you can learn to emulate behavior that's successful.
Do your mentors have to look like you?
Well, they don't have to look like you, but sometimes it helps to have someone who looks like you that has had similar experiences, because when someone comes from a similar background or has had similar experiences, they can speak to you about things in ways that others cannot. So I like to have people that look like me to be part of my mentors, because they have a different experience and they have a different outlook and perspective. And they can provide more valuable guidance in terms of what's unique to being a black man and how do you succeed as a black man.
Do you think that black boys in particular, or boys in general, really benefit from having a male presence in their lives?
So first and foremost, I'll say, we cannot take away from the power of our mothers, because especially in the black community, black mothers have been holding it down for years. So first and foremost, I have to do a shout out to black mothers and mothers as a whole. But on the other side, you've got to have people who are, and I'm sorry, can we take a step back? Because I want to make sure that I answer your question specifically. So can you just repeat that question, please?
Sure. I'm asking you if you believe that black boys in particular, or boys in general, are best suited with a male mentor.
Yes. I think, again, shout out to mothers, that it's very important. But it's important for boys in general to have positive male role models, because the way that we handle things and process information is different than females do. But it's also important for black men to have positive role models, because I think we've had some breakdowns in our communities that folks don't necessarily want to address. And we have an issue with having the school to prison pipeline. And so having men who are positive that are in your life, whether they're people of color or not, are very crucial to ensure that we start to decrease school to prison pipeline.
As a youngster, certainly under the age of 18, it's not necessarily easy, but it is certainly doable to find a mentor. There are various different programs, organizations, societies that make themselves available for mentoring to adolescents. As a man, as an adult, how do you identify mentors?
I identify mentors through first people that I know, because if I don't know where to find a good mentor, what I will do is I will have conversations with people that I trust, and use that networking, talking to people that I know to find people that are good connections, and then to have those conversations. Outside of that, I also work with my school. There are great counselors that can help you to find positive role models. You can go within your church to find people, within your community center. If you're in college, they have great programs there as well. But there's also a lot of community-based programs that are available, and there are people who are willing to assist you. One of the other things that I often do, and some folks might think that this is a little strange, but I always believe in putting myself out there. If I see somebody on TV or I've read an article about someone, I might look them up and see if I can get a hold of them on their website to see if they're available to do some mentoring and coaching. Years ago, I connected with Steve Harvey's business partner, Rashawn McDonald, and I reached out to him on social media, had him in for a couple of interviews for a print article and also for a radio interview, and then he actually provided some mentoring after that through phone calls and conversations. So you can reach out to people who you see on TV. Some of them will be willing to reach out and reach back.
So don't be shy.
Absolutely, because this is your future you're talking about, and if you want to be successful, you've got to take the initiative to go find them, because they might be out there available, but if they don't know that you exist or that you want their assistance, there's a lot of folks like me, because I do a lot of outreach and reaching back and helping. One of the things that I do is I go into the jails. Well, these guys, I go in there, and for example, a week ago I went into the jail and did a talk with a new group of guys. They asked me to go up to the higher level inmates, which I hadn't previously dealt with. And these are folks that have done more violent crimes, but they don't have a lot of programming. I wasn't sure if I necessarily could go in there and make a difference, but I said, let me go in there and have a conversation. I told them about my story, overcoming challenges, my educational challenges, my mental health challenges, and then I left it up to them to sign up and tell me that they want me to be part of their lives. And it was in that moment, by making myself available to them, that, and they said that they wanted me to be there, I was willing to step up. And there's a lot of mentors who are willing to step up if you just go and sign up.
You know, you mentioned a few moments ago the school-to-prison pipeline, and now you're talking about going into the various jails and assisting folks who are there. There is so much that... much of it myths, I would suggest, that people believe about, quote-unquote, those people in jail. Is there something that you would like? I mean, we all know the myths, right? They're bad, they're irredeemable, they're where they belong, they're there because they actually did the crime. Are there any of those things that you would like to address?
Yes. Let me tell you, I never, ever expected to be in a jail for any reason. And my friends and family, coincidentally, they pushed me in to go work in the jail using my books from the It's a Crazy World, Learn From It series. And I was like, why would I take these inspirational quotes into the jail? These guys don't want this. You know, guys don't want to listen to inspirational quotes. And one of my buddies said to me, he said, they need that inspiration a lot more than a lot of other people do, because they're in a place that could be a very dark place for them, and now they could be in this cycle. And so I wasn't sure about going in, but I went in and I started having a conversation with these guys and realized that these guys aren't any different than any of us. Any of us are one moment in time from being in the same place where they are. But the problem is we judge. We judge others based on what we think we know. And when we don't know all of the facts, we fill in the blanks, and not always in the most positive light. So for me, when I went in, I will tell you, the first time that I went into the jail and they asked me to go into the housing unit that I was going to go in, when I looked through the glass and I saw all these guys walking around in the unit with these jumpsuits on, it had a certain effect on me. And I didn't know if I could go in. But here's the thing that happened, because I think, and because I'm very big in my faith, I believe that God puts things in front of us sometimes to help us see things differently. And it changed my whole perspective. When I walked into the unit, I took about three steps, and someone called me by my legal name, my legal first name, which is Stacy. I prefer to go by Sly, but it said Stacy. And I was like, nobody in here knows me. And then I took a couple of more steps, and he said, Stacy. And I was like, well, who's calling me that could know me in here? And then all of a sudden, this man stood up. And he said, hey, it's such and such from such and such. And in that moment, I realized that this guy was somebody that I used to run with in junior high and high school. And it validated that any one of us could be there. But more importantly, it said to me that God was giving me a sign that that was where I was supposed to be. Because in that instant, in that moment, he made me realize that anybody that I knew could be in there and could need my help. And here's a man that I knew once needed my help now.
We are talking to Sly, who is the author of It's a Crazy World, Learn From It. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Sly, I'm looking at part two of the It's a Crazy World series, Learn From It. Part two is moving forward. And I am looking at a comment that you make about challenges, in which you say they provide opportunities to expand boundaries, and that without challenges, the opportunities for growth are limited. As you look at the world in which we are living today, do you see challenges?
Oh, we have more challenges than we ever could have imagined, especially with the election of the president. And a lot of folks are up in arms now, and I think that's great. I think a lot of folks might not look at it this way, but I think one of the best things that has happened with this particular election is that it has woken people up to the realities that words and actions matter. And you have to get involved in the process. I think as a black man, as black people in general, I think when we got around the 80s, I think a lot of us started to feel like we had arrived, and there still was a little bit of a push, but the push had slowed down just a little bit. In the 90s and the 2000s, by being told that you're just as good as, you know, we don't have all the problems that we used to have in your parents or your grandparents' generations, the thought and processes started to change. And then we had the election of the first black president, and then everybody was being told, we're in the post-racist society, you can be anything that you want. And I believe that many people can achieve a lot of things that they want to achieve, but I don't necessarily believe that everybody can achieve anything that they want. But we were given all of this language, and then people got comfortable, and they got relax, and they felt that their vote didn't matter because other folks were going to go out there. And what we learned from this is that we have to stay engaged. We have to stay involved, and all of us have to be involved in the political process and go out and vote. And we also are responsible for making sure that those who are around us who might not otherwise be politically engaged just because they don't see a black person running for office, that we have to have ongoing conversations with them, that it's critically important that every day we're aware, we're involved, and when things are not happening the way that we want them to, or if someone is trying to take us back, as is happening right now, that we stand up actively and fight. We cannot stop fighting, because if we let our guard down, we will go back, and we'll be in a society that none of us want to have again.
As you talk about the need to stand up and fight and to continue fighting, I'm fairly certain that there is at least one or two folks who were saying, but I'm so tired of fighting.
You can never get tired of fighting, because once you become complicit through non-action, you are accepting whatever happens to you. And people who are successful, people who are champions, do not sit on the sidelines and watch things happen. You get involved. Each one of us has a responsibility to protect and to defend not only this great nation, this democracy, but civil rights for everyone, not just those that look like you or that reside in your neighborhood. Civil rights, equal rights, human rights are valuable and critically important for everyone.
In, again, I'm going back to Crazy World Part 3, which is subtitled Keeping It Going. And you have a comment entitled Forward Thinking, in which you say that thinking beyond the current moment helps to shape dreams, drive progress, and change futures. Is that what you're talking about as you are asking people to stand up and fight for their beliefs?
Absolutely, because you have to look at where you are today, but you always have to keep an eye looking into the future, saying, where is it that we want to be in the future, and what do we need to do today to make sure that we're heading in that direction and we're not going backwards? We've got to just make sure that we're always looking for, always taking action that's going to drive us forward. One of the things that I always like to tell folks is that life or business is like playing chess. You can't think about where you are in this moment, and you can't think about just that one next move. You've got to think about, I'm here right now, but what are the possible moves that I can make? I can have A, B, C, and D, but I also should be thinking about A1, A2, A3, B1, B2, B3, C1, C2, C3, or, and also A11, A12, A13. We need to think about all of the possible options, because when we only think about what we see in front of us right now, then we're not ready or prepared through planning to be responsive to all those other things that could have happened. Because looking at this election right now, we were caught flat-footed that it was even a possibility that this man would be elected. And we shouldn't have waited until after the election to start marching and protesting. That should have happened throughout the election cycle when this man started saying things that weren't presidential, were racist, we're trying to be divisive. We should have started protesting then, and now we're in a reactive mode. Now we've got to deal with this man for however long he's in office.
You sound unhappy.
You know what? I don't know if I would say unhappy, but I would say I am extremely motivated and driven to drive change and to be engaged more in the political process than I've ever been before. Because even as I talk about us collectively, I did not take the actions that I needed with the platforms that I have, my radio program, my blog, to start writing and speaking out about these things. And I think across the board, media allowed this election to happen the way that it did because we dealt with all of the distractions, all the comments and commentary, but we didn't deal with the issues and we didn't hold him accountable and responsible. And now we're trying to do that on the back end. So from this point forward, I'm going to make sure that I'm accountable and responsible, not only for my actions, but ensuring that others are accountable and responsible for theirs as well.
I am looking at a comment from Keeping It Going, in which you say, if you don't have direction, then any street will do. And that is true.
Yes. When you don't know where you're going, you're just wandering aimlessly. And you got to have direction in your life. You have to know what it is that you need to do. So each of us has a passion. Each of us has dreams. We have to figure out what are our passions, what are our dreams, and how do we strategically get there through planning it out and then doing checkpoints along the way and identifying people who can help us. We have to be mindful in the things that we do. We cannot wander aimlessly, because if you're wandering aimlessly, you do not make things happen.
So again, it sounds like you're saying that you really have to engage in thoughtful planning all the time.
It is a continuous activity. I am planning all the time. When I go to bed at night, I'm already planning for the next day. When I get up in the morning, I review my plan to see if that's the right plan for that day. And I'm also thinking about what are my plans for the future throughout the day and once I get through the day. So we have to continuously be thinking about what we're going to be doing and how our actions lead back to the things that we want to accomplish.
You know, I'm reminded of again the article that you have at Huffington Post, and you talk about the years that you had spent in the corporate world being quite successful, and so you decided that it was time to take a vacation, which makes sense. And as you were on your vacation, a gentleman came up to you with keys in his hand and wanted to give you the keys so that you could get him his car. Now, you can be as thoughtful as you wish, and you can be as mindful as you can be about thinking and planning your future. But when something like that happens, does it throw you off track or what?
Well, it doesn't throw you off track if you've already planned for it. If you've already dealt with it, you know how to deal with it again in the future. And so that wasn't the first time that I had had something like that happen after I had led a successful life and I was out doing something that I enjoyed. Even when I started my corporate career, I was starting to take my boxes because I decided to move my own stuff. I had got a promotion, which allowed me to have an office, and I decided to move my stuff into my office. And the gentleman that was going to be moving into the office next to me happened to be white, and he came out and he said, "Once you're done with those boxes, can you put all of my boxes in here?" And I said, "Excuse me, but I'm actually moving my boxes into the office next to you." And so it's those things, when they happen, it makes you aware. And when you're aware, you prepare yourself for those type of situations in the future, because what you don't want to have happen is to be caught out of yourself and acting in a way that they can say, "Yes, that validates what I think about those people." And so we have to be mindful in the way that we respond, because we don't want to validate the stereotypes.
For those folks listening who, in general, are in environments or relationships or whatever where they routinely believe that they are devalued by their surroundings, how do you suggest they navigate that?
Well, the first thing, the easiest approach is to leave. That's the easiest thing to do. But that's not always the most practical thing to do. So, again, going back to the mentors, if you have a mentor, if you're working in an organization, for example, where these things are happening and you don't know what to do, you should have your life mentor that we talked about. You could have your personal mentor that we talked about. But you can also have a mentor that's outside of that organization who you can go have conversations about these things. So it's all about making sure that you have that plan, you have those mentors in place, so when you have these instances where things aren't happening the way that you want them to and you can't deal with it on your own, you have resources that you can tap into that can help guide you in your decision-making process. For example, I had to make a tough decision earlier this week, and in making that decision, I knew that I had people that I could contact that could help me. I contacted my sister, and we had a conversation. I contacted a close friend who happened to be out of state, who is one of my mentors from far away. I actually contacted someone who's in the business, or one of the businesses that I'm in, and had a conversation with her. And so I got a lot of different input points. But because I had already developed a plan for my life, and I said it's critical that I have mentors, that because I don't have all the answers. And when I don't have all the answers, I need to have conversations with people that I trust. So I already had my team in place. And when you can develop that team through networking, it allows you to be a lot stronger sometimes than you can be on your own.
There was a time, as I know you know, when the idea of a man reaching out for help in whatever arena he chose to reach was really seen as a weakness. You know, that was kind of the woman's thing. Women always ask for help. Well, that's because women always need help. But to be a real man, that's not something that a real man has to do. What do you say to that concept? I think it's much better nowadays, but I think it still exists. What do you think?
It absolutely still exists. And my first rhetorical question is, what's a real man? Right? And so we have to get rid of this notion of what it means to be a man, or what it means to be a woman, but also, not only that, but what does it mean to be a person of color? And so we can have all of these descriptors that are out there, but it ultimately starts with being comfortable with who you are. Too many times people are trying to appease others, and they'll act a certain way so that they can fit in. And that's one of the worst things that you can do, because when you're trying to fit in unnecessarily, if that's not who you are, then you're not allowing yourself to be and do you without exceptions. And that was one of the hardest lessons that I've learned when, as I was recovering from my near suicide in March of 2014, once I got to that point, but it shouldn't have taken me getting to that point to make this realization, is I have to be me. As long as I'm being positive, I have to be me. And so now I do all the things that I want to do without exception, because I'm being who I am. I'm being authentic, and I don't have to be who you want me to be in order for me to be okay with me or for me to be successful.
Sounds like you've really taken your life back.
Absolutely. I own my life 100%. Win, draw, or challenge to get over. I don't like to use the word fail because, you know, I think we overuse the word failure, because failure is not an endpoint. It's part of the process. And the quicker that we can embrace opportunities that are setback and use them as opportunities to learn and grow, that's how we're successful. That's why I wrote this book, or these series of books, It's a Crazy Word, Learn From It, because as I was rebuilding my life, I thought about what are all these things that I would want to know, and what are the things that I need to learn as I'm rebuilding my life. And I went inside to be very reflective and use those lessons as building blocks to rebuild my life and to live my life on purpose. A lot of individuals don't live their life on purpose. They don't know where they're going. They say, oh, well, I got up today. I'm going to go do this. Every single day when I get up, I know exactly what I have to do that day. I might not get to all of those things, but I have a plan every single day, because prior to my near suicide, I did not have a definitive plan for my life. And when you have purpose, it creates a totally different perspective. And so I've changed my outlook by understanding my purpose, and I'm driving the things that I want to do because I understand my perspective.
You talked a couple of times about your experience with depression and ultimately a suicide attempt. Indeed, as I indicated earlier, that's one of the first things that we talked about when you first joined me here at Mind Talk. Again, more and more men are acknowledging that there are things going on in their lives with which they need help. I'm wondering what kind of response you get from men in particular when you acknowledge your own depression and your own attempts at self-harm.
Well, generally, it's an interesting response, but with men specifically, you get this judgment about, why would you be telling folks this? You must be weak because this happened to you. And it has nothing to do with being weak. It has oftentimes, a lot of times, somebody who gets really extremely depressed, they've been dealing with something so long all by themselves that they've been bottling it up, because a lot of times people smile in your face because they don't want to tell you, because folks don't want to hear what's going on. And one of the things that I think is critically important that needs to change for men generally, but for black men specifically, is that we have to get past this concept or conversations that someone who allows their emotions to come out is weak. Because I think one of the biggest challenges is that men, especially black men, are told to be strong all the time. Don't allow anybody to see your emotions. Don't be effeminate. And it has nothing to do with being effeminate. It has to do with allowing your emotions to process. And one of the other articles that I wrote is about why shouldn't men cry. And what I learned through my experience is, for example, when my grandmother died, I was at the funeral and a family member was next to me, and I'm crying, allowing my emotions, because that's a normal human process.
Right.
And I was scolded for crying. And then I said, no, I'm going to allow this to happen. So that's on the negative side. But here's the other side. On the positive side, I was in one of my classrooms one day, and my students were saying things nice, because I teach college students. They were saying some really nice things about me at the end of the semester. And then what I did was, because I didn't want my emotions to be on display, I made a joke about it. Instead of allowing my tears to come out, I said, oh my God, it's getting hot in here, and started fanning my face. But what I realized is, by blocking that, I didn't allow my emotions to fully come out, so I didn't really fully experience the joy of that moment. But one other comment that I want to make quickly is that when I was in the jail and I was reading through one of my books about my educational journey, I'm standing in front of these guys, and one of the guys in the jail said to me, "There's more to your story than you're telling me." And this was a couple of weeks after I had almost taken my life. And then I was just like, be careful what you ask for, because there might be more to it. And then at that moment, because they didn't know that I had almost taken my life, I turned around because I thought, I'm in a jail. These guys are all tough. They're going to think that I'm a wimp. They're not going to respect me anymore because if they see me cry. So I turned around because I was starting to get emotional because I did not want these men to see me cry. And it was the most interesting thing. In this environment that had about 35 to 40 guys in the jail, one by one, at least 10 or 15 of them told me to take my time. It's okay whenever you're ready. And so,
Sly, I'm going to interrupt you.
Oh, sure.
So that we can take a break. But when we come back, I'd like you to finish the rest of that experience. It sounds like it was very powerful.
It was.
Folks, we'll be right back. Don't you move. As you were talking about your experience in the jail, it struck me that, as you described it, you were in this room with all of these guys who seemed big and powerful and tough and, you know, not at all anything other than big, powerful, and tough. And as you were attempting to gather yourself to respond to the question of what are you not saying, they reached out to you, it sounds like, in very empathetic ways. And folks don't think about people in jail as having empathy.
No, not at all. And so when these guys, as I was saying, they started to say, take your time, once you're ready, I actually had a moment of shock because I was like, where am I? I'm in a jail and these guys are being supportive? But it's also emblematic of when people make meaningful connections. And as men, we don't necessarily make those emotional connections because in order for them to support this man who was coming in and providing training for them, it said that I connected with them in meaningful ways. And once we have connections where we can connect in meaningful ways on emotional levels, it allows us to develop relationships that are really meaningful and significant other than having surface relationships. Because a lot of times as men, we don't get into the feelings and all of those things. And when we don't learn to process our feelings, when we don't allow ourselves to have emotional connections to not just women, but also to men as well, where we're having conversations that are real, we don't allow those relationships to fully develop.
And it sounds like for you, what you're saying is that they're really important that you be a full human being.
Absolutely. We have to allow ourselves to feel a full range of emotions, and we cannot block those, because when we block those emotions, we don't allow ourselves to be human.
You also said a little bit earlier that failure is not the end point. It's actually perhaps a midway section. And so many times, and I would say that this is particularly true of people of color, but certainly women as well, but I think more generally people of color, male and female, if you have quote unquote failed at something, the belief is that, and the message that you get is that that is the end point. You failed, you're out of here. You can't do it, you're dumb, you're whatever.
And I think the reason that that is created, I think that that is a reflection of society. And I can speak from this, speak to this from a personal perspective, is that when I was in the 10th grade, I failed 6 out of 7 classes because I wasn't doing any work. I was doing drugs. I wasn't showing up. And instead of anybody asking if they could help me, the one time that they had a conversation about anything that was going on was in a parent-teacher conference, and they said, he's not doing the work. He's not meant to be in high school because he's never going to make anything out of his life. Get out. And so when people see you based on a color, well, this is just another black boy that's not performing, it that low level of expectation has an impact. And one of the things that I like to tell folks generally, but especially when I see minority men that are struggling, because I know that they could potentially be on that school to prison pipeline, is that failure at a moment does not mean a failure of a life. Because failure is necessary for growth. Because too many times in our society, we tell folks to develop this, because go work on your strengths. Well, I think working on your strengths are important, but we don't learn as much when we succeed. We learn more from our failures than we do from our successes, because we have to figure out what's going wrong. And so what I tell folks is go ahead and fail as many times as you want to, because that means that you're trying. But as you fail, get up quickly and fail forward.
And again, as you just said, if you have what you consider to be a failure experience, figure out what you learn from that experience.
And that is the benefit of failure, because it's not, failure is not a destination. It is a part of the process. That is how we learn and grow. If we think back to when we were really, really young, and then we were wanting to crawl. Well, we started to crawl, but sometimes we would fall down. But then we're like, oh, I need to get back up on my knees again, then I can move because I want something. There's something ahead of me that I want to go get. And then when we started walking, take a couple steps, wobble, and then we would fall. But the most critical part of that process is how our parents reacted. Because if our parents were like, oh, my gosh, it's the end of the world, versus, oh, good for you, get back up. That level of encouragement makes a difference. And that's what we need to do with people that who are having challenges, that they're not necessarily advancing as fast as they should be at a particular moment. Maybe it might be we might need to do some hand-holding to get them to advance. Maybe it might be redirection. We might need to send them in a different direction. Maybe what they're doing is not right for them. And maybe sometimes we have to do some steps backwards so that we can reinforce some of the things that they might not have learned previously. And that's the biggest challenge I think we have with many of the minority men that I deal with, is some of them didn't have the skills that are developed early. And I even have this just generally in my college classes. We are pushing people through the pipeline focused on memorization and regurgitation, and we're not teaching valuable life skills. And so that's why, and I just want to go back to the jail, that's why I go in the jail, because I am that former at-risk student who people wanted to throw away. And because I didn't have anybody who wanted to take the time to teach me not just information, but how do I take this information and make it applicable to my life so that I can use it to add value so that I can make forward progress.
You talk about the value of learning from failure and moving, learning from what you perceive as failure and moving forward in your life and really honing in on that path to whatever success is for you. And again, it takes me back to your Huffington Post article in which you talked about, certainly you talked about labels in general, and you talked about the labels that you that were attached to you as you young and growing up, and in some instances being silly. But then you talk about the label that was attached to you as you were moving forward, as you were looking to, quote unquote, better yourself and to change your circumstance. And then you got another label. What was that label?
Well, you know, I sort of chuckle, but it's not that I think it's funny. It's just, it's amazing to me that when somebody is doing something positive with their life, then others will criticize. And one of the problems that we have in the black community is the crabs in the barrel syndrome. When somebody is trying to make their way up, people will try to bring them down. But the other thing that I see, generally speaking, is that a lot of blacks aren't looking to work together as other minority groups do. And so as I started to turn my life around, so going from this kid who was smoking pot, not attending classes, not doing well, and goofing off and being just, you know, bad all around, not a bad person, just making bad choices, when I started to turn my life around, started to do things that were productive, participating in clubs, track and field, and hang around with a different group of people that were diverse, even though the crowd I was dealing with was diverse, then people started to give me the label that now you're trying to act white. I still don't know what that means because I was trying to speak like I could make sense of the things that I was talking about and be articulate. So we have to be careful when we have people in our environment, when we're trying to do positive things, that they're making or they're attaching negative references to the things that we're doing or descriptors. We need to make sure that we divorce those type of people from our life because those aren't the positive support system that you need to have. We want to support. We want to surround ourselves with people who are going to support us in our efforts to lift ourselves up. And the one other thing that I want to say quickly is, what I have found with working with people who are at-risk people do not want a handout. So a lot of folks will say, well, they just want to get a handout. They just want the easy road. That is not what I have found. What these folks are looking for is for you to extend your handout to give them to be able to connect with their hands to help them to lift themselves up because they're willing to do the work. They just don't know how necessarily.
I think that's certainly an important piece to ensure that we all hear, particularly in today's times when there is so much being said and done with respect to those programs that are designed to offer a hand up to help folks pull themselves up to do what they choose to do in their lives. Do you think that those programs are under attack, or is that just my view?
I don't know if they're necessarily under attack. I think the challenges that we've had in the past still exist. I just think that things are more amplified now, and I think part of that is because of social media and being able to get the word out a lot quicker, and we're able to document more of these things. So I think the challenges have always been there, and I think they'll be there for a while as we continue to do the work, but I don't think it's any real difference than it was before. I just think that we see it a lot easier and a lot quicker these days.
I see. I wonder what your thoughts are or what you would like to say to young men in general and young black men in general who, by virtue of their appearance, seem to have lost their way. I'm not saying that they have. I'm saying that there are people who will look at them and say, oh, well, he's a whatever, fill in the blanks. Is that something to be mindful of, or is that not? Is that somebody else using an excuse to put a label on you?
It's absolutely something that you need to be mindful of because folks, unfortunately, judge all the time. And where I like to start with my conversations with folks is you have to start with self-love. You have to love yourself and know that no matter what other labels that others are putting on you, that is not who you are, and it does not define you. You define who you are and what you're willing to do. So when you take action to move forward and do positive things, folks will judge you on the work that you do, but you can never allow someone's perceptions of you or someone who doesn't see things the same way as you do to prevent you from moving forward. One of the things that I think is often interesting is that sometimes I tell some of my minority friends that I want to do certain things and I don't necessarily get their support. And too often I hear from them, no, you can't do this, including when I was starting to turn my life around. And one of the things that I like to do is, or I have done, is I redefine the word no. And when someone tells me no, I've redefined that word to new orientation. That means that you're not the person that I should be speaking to. So I change my direction and I go somewhere else because the label that I associate with myself drives all of my future actions. And we were talking about self-talks earlier. When I was trying to move forward, there were two self-talks that I had. One, when I was trying to pick myself up initially, was, you're wasting time doing stupid things and not being the man that you're meant to be. So I would tell myself all the time, because it was a look into my future, that actually look into my past, that I wasn't doing the things that I needed to do to be successful in the future. And then as I continued to advance and do a lot more things that I never could have imagined that I would do, my self-talk changed to tell myself that I'm a superstar. And so a lot of folks aren't willing to say to themselves, I'm a superstar. Why would I tell myself anything less than that? And then I live that way every day as if I am a superstar, which I am, because I believe.
Sly, on that note, we are going to have to say so long just for today. But I really do appreciate your taking the time to come on and talk with us today. Give us a website or a place where we can go to find out more about what you're doing.
And do I have time for just one quick quote?
If it's like two words.
Oh, then I don't have time then. So anyway, so my website is slyoung.com. And if you're looking to overcome challenges, I have a specific site dedicated. It's slyoung.com/inspire.html.
All right. Give us that one once more time.
It's slyoung.com/inspire.html. And that's really about my educational challenges and working with folks in the at-risk communities, including the jail.
Okay, terrific. Again, Sly, thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
Well, thank you for having me again.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk, which is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, you can always send an email to pamela@mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. Also at the Mind Talk site, you can always listen to each daily Mind Talk program on demand. You can start at the homepage and go from there. You can also download the iTunes app, the Mind Talk iTunes app, and the Mind Talk Google Play app. So you've got lots of ways to connect with Mind Talk and listen to it on demand as you choose. And folks, I close by saying, if it's unacceptable, then that is exactly what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.